Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
So if you guys want to check out Away Suitcases, go to awaytravel.com/degree to get $20 off your first suitcase. That's awaytravel.com/degree for $20 off your suitcase.
The first degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
So I ended up, we ended up like tossing a little bit, and then I fell onto the floor, and he's just wailing on me, and he had the knife in a Del Taco bag. So at first I didn't understand I was getting stabbed.
Hey guys, welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter next to Billy Jensen, and we have an extra special guest in the studio, and this is a rare occurrence. It doesn't happen often. I think it's only happened once for us in the beginning.
Right.
We have Tara Newell from, I don't know if you've listened to it, Dirty John podcast. It's one of the most infamous podcasts about true crime, I think, that has ever been.
It was certainly one of the best I've ever heard.
Yeah. And so thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys so much for having me. You're making me feel so special.
You're special. You cannot get us, like, out of Hollywood to go do a podcast. So this is a big deal for us.
Driving to Beverly Hills in traffic is pretty special.
It is pretty special.
And also, you're one of the Long Beach. Yeah. Yeah. And you're one of the biggest badasses in true crime because you are an amazing survivor and now thriver.
Thank you.
And your story is incredibly amazing.
Yeah, inspirational to pretty much every woman on the face of this earth.
Yeah.
And man, right?
And man, too, yeah. No, you don't have to be a woman to be inspired by.
Honestly, when I was listening to your podcast, but when I was listening to the part of the podcast where that was playing out, I was so overwhelmed. And the idea, I mean, it didn't cross my mind that you would ever be on ours, but I'm just so happy you are.
Thank you, guys.
It's unbelievable. You are this tiny, beautiful angel person. Honestly, and it's like the idea that you were able to do what you did overwhelms
me. We're going
to
jump into it. You're already jumping so far ahead.
Because I'm going to cry.
I know. But okay, so before we get to our day, I just want to say CrimeCon is in 2 days. We're going to be there on Podcast Row. Billy's also doing a panel, but Tara's going to be there as well. And you're going to be doing a panel and a luncheon and all this stuff, right?
Yes.
And having drinks with us.
And becoming our new best friend.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So what are you doing at CrimeCon?
We are doing a panel and talking about coercive control with Laura Richards and my mother, Deborah Newell. And then we are doing a luncheon where guests can come and do like one-on-one meet and greets with us and get to know us and just ask us any questions they may have.
A nice little meet and greet. Cool. That's so please awesome. Come and visit us. It'll be so fun. But what day is it, Billy?
Also use our code DEGREE19
for 10%
off. Your passes.
Happy Festival of Popular Delusions Day.
What does that even mean?
It's so abstract that that's the one I pick for the day. I already know I love it.
Yeah, but it's also, and you'll appreciate this, Jack, Happy National Attitude Day.
Jack's day.
I do have an attitude. I am the sass queen.
You really are.
I will have to say, so thank you for my day.
And it's also National Veggie Burger Day, too, but nobody cares about that.
Yeah. Well, what is your favorite day, Tara?
On that one?
Yeah. On this one. Here, you can...
Choose
your own day.
What is resonating with you?
I like National Attitude Day because I feel like every woman should have a little bit of an attitude, and even like a man. Sometimes.
but not that much.
No, so
I don't think men
mostly
need attitude.
Men should
at all.
Just sit down.
Yeah.
Kind of big enough dicks as it is.
Yeah. We just need to listen.
Yeah, unless like you're a gay man, you know, like all
They're
of my
fine.
Friends are like,
yeah.
You know what, sit down, Tara. And I'm like, okay.
Standing is exhausted. Yes. I will sit down.
My legs are tired. I will have a seat. Thank you. Do you have one? You want to pull up a chair for me? Thanks, asshole.
Right.
Okay, so we're doing this podcast a little bit different because Tara's in the studio. And also because I'm assuming if you guys are listening to this podcast, you probably know your story already. So we wanted to just get a new perspective. And we obviously, when we were listening to the podcast, watching the show, we had a bunch of questions that we'd want to ask you if we ever had you in front of us. So that's kind of what this podcast is going to be. But first, we'll do a little bit of a summary of the Dirty John story.
So we are going to start. We have many questions and some of our listeners had questions and each of us have our own questions. But we want to start in somewhat of a chronological order.
Okay.
So, as far as the beginning of this story, the beginning of this chapter, the Dirty John chapter, talk about the moment you met this person and what you knew and what your instincts were, and try to remain in those moments and not in hindsight, because
like first impressions,
of course, because obviously knowing what you know now, I mean, it's easy to have that all blend together. But truthfully, when you met him, were there alarm bells going off?
Well, at first, I gotta say, like, I don't typically like a lot of my mom's boyfriends or significant others. She just doesn't have the best picker sometimes.
Same. I mean, honestly,
that resonates
same.
With
yeah.
me.
And so whenever I would meet them, I just kind of go into already like judging them.
Yeah.
And so I went there and I drove all the way from Vegas to stay with my mom because she was moving to the Balboa place. And I just remember meeting him with my ex-boyfriend at the time, and John was trying to put mattress on the car, and he seemed to really be struggling. And so my ex-boyfriend went and like helped him, and my ex-boyfriend had a cast at the time, so it like kind of looked like Tweedledee and Tweedledum like trying to put a mattress on top of the car.
Oh, God.
So I was just like, okay, that's interesting, but like not judging, because you know, you can't judge someone for not being able to put a mattress on top of a car.
Yeah, again.
Yeah. And then I go to meet him, and he just doesn't really introduce himself at first. And then my mom comes down. She introduces her, like, significant other to us and was like, oh, this is John. And John, this is my daughter, Tara. I'm so excited for you guys to meet each other. And we met each other, and it was just like, oh, okay, like,
another
nice to meet you.
Moron, yeah.
Yeah, and then we get to the Balboa house and we unload the stuff. She kept talking about how much he loved dogs so much and that he was so much like me.
Oh, no.
And I was just like, okay, like, here's my dogs. Here's my three dogs. Like, say hello to them. And he, like, says hi, but, like, one of my dogs is just like, well, it's a border collie, first of all, so they have, like, a little ADHD.
And they're
sometimes.
Smart.
Yeah.
They're, like, the smartest dogs there
yes.
are.
Yes. And so, like, the dog, he was saying hi to the dog, like, on the ground with the dog, and my dog was just, like, putting its head in the air, like, trying to look other places.
But you didn't want to look it in the eye.
Getting snubbed by the dog.
Yeah. So, I didn't think too much into that, because I was like, well, he's a busy dog, like, he just probably
places
wants to run around.
Things
yeah.
to do.
And then we ended up going out to dinner, and we went to CBK, California Pizza Kitchen.
Oh, we know, girl.
Yes. And he paid for the bill, surprisingly. But, like, whenever I would ask him questions at dinner, he just didn't seem like he wanted to engage in the conversation and to give full answers. Like, he wanted to give a close-ended answer where it was not leading to anything more.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think he was doing that because he didn't want to, like, reveal too much about him, since he was obviously like making a lot of shit up.
The more you talk, the more holes you can poke in somebody's story.
Right.
And the more that he'd have to remember when he has to tell the lie again.
He didn't want to get to know us, and he didn't care to get to know us.
Well, and that's the thing when you're encountering something like that. There are a few options. A, they're not that smart, and they can't hold a conversation. B, they're insecure.
Mm-hmm.
C, they don't want to. It's intentional. They're shutting this conversation down on purpose. And those are generally the three things you're working with when you encounter people like this.
Right.
And I'm an idiot. I always give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm like, oh, they're insecure. They're dumb. But it's like, no, they're calculated.
Yeah, they know exactly what they're doing.
Stop doing that.
Okay, so you meet him for the first time. And then when did the first red flags start to show? And when did you just start feeling that, like, in your gut that this guy's weird?
Well, first, were those any red flags at all?
Oh,
or was it just like, all right, this guy's shifty. I normally don't like any of my mom's
either way.
So
boyfriends anyway, and that's it.
One of the signs was him not wanting to look us in the eyes directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And him not being able to hold on a conversation, because normally when you date someone and they have kids, you want to get to know their kids because they're a part of this person.
Right.
And so anyone that has an ounce of empathy or anything in them, then they're going to want to communicate with us and actually conversate with us. And then it's funny that you asked me more about red flags, is because we drove back and we pull up to my mom's new place, and there's me, my ex-boyfriend, and my best friend in the back seat of my mom's car, and I open the door to get out, and I can't get out because there's a child lock on the door. And I say, John, can you let me out? There's a child lock on the door. And I'm kind of soft-spoken, so I'm like, okay, maybe he didn't hear me the first time. So I say it, like, one more time. He gets out of the car, and he goes upstairs, and I'm just like, literally, I'm in the car, and I had to call my mom on the phone, and I was kind of really irritated, and I was like, Mom, your freaking boyfriend won't let me out of the car right now. Like, can you come downstairs and let us out of the car?
Do you think it was, in hindsight, is that, like, a power move?
I think it's, a control issue.
Like, he was going to be like, I'm not going to let you out of the car.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And
I'm going to pretend I just didn't hear you. Yeah. But I'm really doing it on purpose.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So I thought that was extremely weird.
Yeah, that is a weird thing.
What it is, it seems like resentful behavior. Because I've done stuff like that, little things, when I'm irritated at a friend.
You're like, I know that.
No, my friend, best friend from home, has been sending me Venmo requests for bottle service in Vegas that I don't want to pay because I didn't want to get bottle service. And it was for $2.97. And I did it 3 days later than she wanted, and I gave her $2.95. And it was because I was pissed. So that's resentful behavior. And that's an example of me doing that. But it's harmless. Like, you can eat the $2. I flew to Vegas for you.
Right.
Yeah. But it was just to be a dick and prove a point, but it was harmless. That seems like something someone would do when they're mad at you, but he had no reason to be mad at you.
Exactly.
It was just to show you, like...
Well, and it's, like, dismissive, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right. Mm. Someone who does it.
You're such a dick.
I know.
So these, like, little red flags keep popping up, and... Did you ever talk to your mom about the guys that she was dating? Like, and express your opinion, saying that, like, maybe this guy isn't right, or this is kind of weird?
All the time, which is why she probably didn't take my sister and I serious when we were saying, like, hey, there's something not right with this guy here. So it, like, kind of created my mom to be like, oh, well, they don't like anyone who I date.
What were the things that you would say about the other guys?
Well, a lot of them were actually, like, kind of con artists also.
Yeah, I was going to say, did she date any other, like, narcissistic?
Yes, and, like, the last guy she was engaged to, like, she bought him a plane, and...
If you could see all of her faces.
Yeah, no, she bought him a plane because he was like, well, I can't come down to see you that much. I live in Northern California. And he had his pilot license. So she was like, oh, I'll just like get you a plane, I guess.
Oh my gosh.
There was like probably more to it, like right. Not just I'll get you a
but
plane.
But the cliff notes are all you need to know about that. He ended up with a plane.
Yeah, so like he really pulled one over on her. She was engaged to him, but like he had multiple other women, and I think he even had a wife or something.
Oh my God.
So just like coming from that into this guy, we were already, the family was already on like red alert.
Jesus.
She looks something I would do.
Did she find all these guys on, because she found John on Match, right?
Our Time.
What the hell is that?
Oh, that's the 50 and over or something, 60 and over?
Is it oh, 50 or yeah.
It's like,
over, yeah.
You're like reclaiming your time back. It's our time. Yeah, it's our time now.
The kids are out of the house. It's our time. Yeah.
So, but did she find all the other guys on dating apps too?
So a lot of them she actually like got set up through friends.
Okay.
But she was
shitty
doing,
friends, man.
Right? Like she
were these dudes.
Friends don't know. I mean, I hear stories in some of the cases we cover too where it's like they set them up and then one of them he kills them. You know, it's like you don't the friends are just as tricked by their fake charisma, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Especially friends, like guy friends I have, if I set them up with someone, I'd be like, he's a good guy. Like, you don't really know friends that well when you're an adult.
Yeah.
Right.
You see them like once a month, except for you two. I see you guys too much.
Yeah, because we're stuck doing this.
We love doing this.
Perfect.
I swear we love it.
No, we do.
So I know a lot of you guys binge The First Degree and probably a lot of other true crime podcasts. And what are you going to do when you have nothing else to listen to? Well, I have a great solution for you, and that is checking out Oxygen's new special, Death at the Mansion, Rebecca Zahow. So I don't know if you guys have heard of this case before, but it's a very, very complicated one, and we're going to get into it a little bit right now. The captivating new series follows an elite team of investigators, including former prosecutor Lonnie Combs, with our very own true crime journalist Billy Jensen and forensic criminologist Paul Holes, which I'm sure you guys all know about, as they take another look at this mysterious case. The series will re-examine the numerous theories surrounding the bizarre case, meeting with experts, family members, witnesses, and never before interviewed law enforcement officials. And they create a case file with compelling new evidence, which is strong enough to present to the San Diego Sheriff's Office for review. It's such a good series. I've watched it all, and you guys are going to absolutely love it. A new episode of Death at the Mansion, Rebecca Zahow, continues this Saturday at 6/5 Central on Oxygen, the true network for crime. And don't worry if you missed any of it, you can catch it all on demand and binge watch anytime.
So when
tell him
the next time that you see him, when did you talk to your mother about him? Was it in between the first time that you met him and the second time?
I think it was. So I went back to Vegas after the first week because I was living in Vegas full time at that time. And then I came back to Balboa, Newport Beach for Thanksgiving. And then I confronted her the day before Thanksgiving that he was driving her car around. And I was like, he's an anesthesiologist. Why doesn't he have his own car? Is there something wrong with him?
Was this had you met him a second time? Or is this
So this would be like, I went, had like a weekend with them.
Okay.
And then I came back for Thanksgiving and had like a few days prior. And then the day before Thanksgiving happened, and confronted her, and I just had all these questions. And then when I was confronting her, talking to her, he came up right behind her and started screaming at me and saying that I wanted my mom all to myself. I didn't want to see my mom happy. And then just accusing me of other things also.
And did you start, was this the first time that he ever was like that or showed any aggression towards you?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you think that, did you have a feeling that he wasn't an anesthesiologist?
Never, to be honest. No. I found a nursing certificate in the closet because I was going to put my suitcase in the closet, and then there was a box and his like nursing certificate was like the first thing I saw right on top of the box. You know, it was like, I wasn't snooping. It was just right in front of my eyes.
Do you think you put it there so somebody would see it?
I honestly think that he thought that I was going to turn it around, but I don't know anything about the medical field, so I just was like, okay, he's a nurse also. You know?
Yeah, you're like, this will...
Right.
But something was triggered in him where he thought differently because he accused me of snooping, and I was like, I wasn't snooping.
So then when you ended up putting, like, a tracker on his car...
My sister did.
Your sister ended up putting a tracker on his car. Did you guys have, like, an app on your phone? How are you following it around?
I believe my sister has an app on her phone or from the computer. She is really... involved in spy gadgets.
Hell yeah.
There's like a shop in Newport that you can go to also, and you can just like buy car trackers and other like listening devices for them. And so she went to the spy shop and got a few trackers, put it on my mom's Tesla because she had him driving around her Tesla a lot, and he was going from like different doctor offices to like another one. So I think, well, we thought he was getting drugs during that time and may have been just like writing prescriptions for someone or something along like illegal drugs.
Mm-hmm. Fun fact, one of the hospitals that he went to was where I was born.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Mission Viejo Hospital.
Oh, wow.
Orange County. Yeah, I was like, hospital. Like, great connection.
Oh my gosh.
So wait, what was he doing? Did you ever find out what he was doing?
Nothing but speculations, to be honest,
right?
Because it's not like we had a camera on him. It was just we had a tracker and we found out he was going to different doctors.
Going just
offices.
To pretend to be a doctor.
He could have just been in the parking lot just sitting there for a half an hour, right? Or whatever, right?
Do you think he knew he was being tracked?
I don't think so at this time. I think he thought my sister was crazy, but, like, I didn't think he knew she was really smart.
Where did you put the tracker?
What does a tracker look like?
So, I would actually help my sister out sometimes with this. Uh-huh. So, my mom would go to dinner with me, and he didn't allow my mom to go to dinner with my sister. So, she would, like, have to sneak.
Didn't allow?
Yes. It was so stupid. But I would, like, tell her, okay, let's go to dinner this place. And then I would text my sister and be like, okay, her car's in valet right now. Like, this is where it's at. And then she would go put the tracker on the car. And then my mom would go back home to him. So, and then he would take her car the next day.
Right.
And then where would they put the tracker underneath the car?
Yes, underneath mm-hmm. the car. Like, underneath a bumper or something.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just magnetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so you've got the tracker on the car. How is he acting towards you? Are you at the dinner with him?
No, he wouldn't come because I had the falling out with him.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that, it was
the falling
weird.
Out right before Thanksgiving?
Yes,
that
the day out. Before Thanksgiving.
The day before Thanksgiving. Yes. Okay.
And
so did you even have Thanksgiving dinner with him?
No. I didn't have Thanksgiving dinner with my family at all. Like, my sister and I did a separate thing with our boyfriends, and it was kind of, like, sad. But her boyfriend's a great cook, so he made all the food. And then my niece and my nephew, and then my other sister and brother-in-law came over after my mom's Thanksgiving with John and all of that. Well, I was basically told I wasn't allowed at Thanksgiving, and that was, like, the first year that's ever happened.
Yeah.
And over...
I hope.
Yeah.
Your whole life?
Yeah. And over a guy that she knew for 2 months.
And had she ever, with any of the, like, because you're saying that her past boyfriends were also, like, kind of con artists, narcissist personality people, did any of them pull you away from your family and
not
from
like
her
this.
Like that? So this is like a new thing. It wasn't something that happened with all of the rest of her boyfriends.
You know, it reminds me so much of the Rasmussen and the Allenstown 4 case. And that was his MO was to first, I mean, he would end up, and he was doing it for different reasons, but he would And this was a lot easier to do in the 70s, where he would take somebody, alienate the family, and then move them away. And because you don't have social media, all you had was phones. You had landlines. Oh, we don't have the landline. It was very easy to lose track of somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if this was happening in the 70s, that potentially could have been what he would have done. It's just like, oh, no, we're moving someplace else, and that's it.
And you just stop talking. You lose communication.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, they did eventually move to Vegas. And I think that was part of, like, his MO to, like, separate her.
Yeah. Question I have, as far as, and I know you aren't your mom, but as far as, from your perspective, what is it about the guy she chooses? Like, why do you think she chooses, I mean, she's a successful, accomplished, beautiful woman, attractive, beautiful family, you know, why do you think she chooses these guys?
Well, a lot of these guys do a technique which is called love bombing.
Oh, girl, I've been love bombed.
I've dated a psychopath before. Yeah. So when I was, like, listening to the podcast, I'm like, this... Because they're all... And I'm sure you've done a lot of research, too, afterwards, like, trying to make sense of everything. And all their behavior is so textbook. Mm-hmm. They all do the same moves, and it's the same thing. So when you, like, hear somebody else doing it, like... Yeah, I was love bombed. I was told that he loved me after like 2 days, wanted to marry me after a week, believed all the things. Mm-hmm. So I understand like where you want to believe it so bad with somebody.
Yes.
And like, especially I guess if you're older, your mom was married a couple times, right? Like,
yeah, like 4 or 5.
A few. But it's like if you want that, like it's easy to believe it and it's easy to ignore all the red flags that I guess are happening, right?
Yeah, well, I'm even talking with like one of my friends and she's in a relationship and I don't think this guy's a narcissistic or psychopath or sociopath, but just he is confused and it's just she sees a lot of the red flags that he's confused and she doesn't want to admit to them. So it's when you're in it, you don't want to admit to it because you're like, oh, I think I found this love finally.
Yeah.
I mean, excuses. Yeah. I just did it like a year and a half ago and it was a nightmare. And I moved in with someone. It crashed and burned. I moved out. It was a horrible situation. And it's like, I already thought I was an adult and that I was making wise choices.
Yeah, no, you're not.
So I'm still not.
No, I'm still not
either. Well, they seem wise at the time. And then when you're out of it and you can be introspective, you're just like, what was I thinking?
Yeah. So it's like, do you think that she just wanted that kind of love?
Yeah, like all of her kids were out of the house. She didn't have any dogs at the time, you know, so she wants someone there with her. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a really independent person, but sometimes it's like nice to have someone around to help you with stuff and like give you attention
and put a shelf on a wall.
Yeah.
Even when you're single, it's nice to have someone to just text all day with.
Yes.
It's nice to just have someone.
It's the attention.
It's just a distraction from the horror that is the reality of being an adult.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, cool, at work again.
Sad AF.
And I'm like, it's been 6 weeks. Like, the weeks are flying by. Like, you want something.
Alexis is really venting right now.
I'm really going through it.
She's going through it.
I feel you.
But this is
like
about you,
adult.
Not about me. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, so where are we in the story? We're tracking the car. She's choosing these shitty men over and over again, and then she's getting fooled.
Yes.
So what about the first sign of something more disturbing than just not being invited to Thanksgiving?
He like isolated us, which is a sign a sociopath and psychopath do, is alienate the person from their family and friends. Then a lot of the other red flags is he was using her car. He didn't have his own car. And then when we would ask him why he didn't have his own car, it was because he came up with this elaborate story how when he was in Iraq, all of his cars and his motorcycle got stolen.
Ugh. All the cars. Uh-huh. Look at Billy's face.
And I'm just like, when he told me this story, I'm just like, okay, I call BS on that. Like,
yeah.
You can't tell someone that. And then you're like wondering where the insurance money is. And no offense, but if you're high up there and you're an anesthesiologist, then you have good insurance that will take care of that right away, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, that's a pretty shitty lie. So this is around Thanksgiving, right, that we're talking about? And then when, how long was it between Thanksgiving and then when everything went down?
When everything, so she married him in December. And then I honestly...
Did you go to the wedding?
Heck no. Yeah. She right? She got married in Vegas, though, which is where I was living
Billy
at that
got
time.
Married in Vegas.
I got married in Vegas, too. Where'd you get married?
She's like, I'm blocking it out.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. I don't think it was the Little White Chapel, though.
We did the Little Church of the West.
I think that's where they got married.
Really?
No!
That's where, and the same guy that married us married Richard Gere and Cindy Crawford. And that didn't wind up good at all.
No, but Cindy Crawford did
one out of three.
But also, Elvis marries Anne Margaret at the end of Viva Las Vegas in that same chapel, too.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Is that why you picked it?
That's not why I picked it, no. It was just a cool-looking chapel.
All right. Yeah.
You guys, I've never been so excited for a sponsor on the First Degree in my entire life. And this is because I use this website every single morning and every single night before I go to bed. It is The Real Real. I have a lot of designer stuff, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I've never bought anything new. I buy everything from The Real Real because they are the absolute best. The Real Real, you can buy iconic luxury items at unreal value. And they're the leading reseller of authenticated luxury from top designers. So you're not going to buy a Louis Vuitton bag and wonder if it's real for the rest of your life. Everything is authenticated from them. And you can shop designers like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Rolex, and Cartier and hundreds more for up to 90% off retail. New arrivals come in daily. I search their shoe section every morning and every single item is authenticated by The Real Real's team of experts. You can shop online or visit one of their original stores in Soho or West Hollywood, or their newest location at 870 Madison Avenue in New York. They are the best. And if you want to get 20% off their already reduced prices, use code REAL. Again, that's therealreal.com and use code REAL for 20% off.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
If you like The First Degree, you're going to love Enough About Me with Shep Rose on Podcast One. Join the Southern Charm star as he talks about reality TV and beyond with his wide array of interesting friends. Download new episodes of Enough About Me every week on Apple Podcasts or Podcast One.
So they get married in December.
And nobody goes.
No one goes. It's like, no one even knew about that for probably like a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And so when she, like, left him the first time, I know the date because it was...
What prompted the first leaving?
My family hired a private investigator, and then we showed her all this information, and that's when she left him the first time.
What information?
So that he was a drug addict.
What was he addicted to?
He was doing pills, right?
I believe it was like ketamine and like a bunch of hardcore like painkillers. Wow. And then he loved cocaine.
Shocker.
Yeah, he loved cocaine and he just was into kind of any upper he could get his hands on.
Okay.
And then he would also like send drugs to his brother, but this is like before he even met my mom, and his brother overdosed on the drugs that John gave to him.
Oh shit.
And so
did he die?
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah, so
his own brother.
Yes. So wow. Like his sisters and everything blame John for his brother's death.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some speculation on the dad also, because he went in when his dad was, like, on his deathbed, and his sister left the room, and when his sister came back, the dad was dead. John was very smart, and he did, like, work in the medical field, so his sister thinks that she may have given him something to speed it up.
Mm.
Just like he had somewhere else to be? Like, speed it up by what? 6 hours? 10 hours, 2 weeks. Like, it just seems it's something right. a psychopath would do. Like, I have somewhere to be. Let's get this over with.
Right.
Even if it's he's on his deathbed, it's like, all right, I don't have a week. It sounds like it's something a psychopath would do.
Yeah. Yeah,
and like, justify it. Like, what is a week going to do? He's comatose.
Yeah, like chop chop, dude.
Yeah. Yeah,
he needs that money now.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
What, did he get, like, a... Did he get an inheritance from his dad?
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe there was a small inheritance.
Okay.
Yes.
He needed that money to buy those coffees, you know?
Yes.
Those macchiatos are expensive.
They are. It's $6.
So when does he find out? Does he find out that you hired a PI?
So I don't think he had any idea. I didn't have anything to do with hiring the private PI. It was like my sister Jacqueline, and then my brother-in-law, and then my other sister was involved in that, and that he was using different social security card numbers for nursing certificates and stuff, or not for the nursing certificate, but to be a nurse in other places and mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
And then he also, like, he conned so many other women, and there was information on restraining orders on him from, like, someone in Laguna Beach. I think there was one from his sister in there. And then there was, like, something that just disturbed me so much was John actually, when he was in one of the jails, he cut open his stomach and he put crap in there, like... Yeah.
What?
Wait, what?
So that he would go to the doctor.
To simulate sepsis or something?
So that he would have to go to the doctor and get all these drugs and stuff in him. But he's also smart, and he knows the medical field where he can do it, like,
where he knew he wasn't going to kill himself.
Hurt, you know?
Because I saw psycho.
I saw the pictures, and it was so disgusting. But when I saw those pictures, I was like, if he could do this to himself, then he can harm someone, like, no problem.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
So your mom leaves him. Who does he blame?
I think he's blaming all of us, but yeah. He was able to convince her that a lot of the stuff that the PI found wasn't him, that it was other John Meehan's.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And,
sure.
Yeah, and then he took her to a lawyer, and the lawyer explained this also to her.
Like, from his perspective.
I think so.
I have a question. I'm curious, just hearing what you just said about how your sister Jacqueline was kind of spearheading the PI thing. I'm just wondering how, over time, like, he locked in on you. And why? And, like, because you seem the most, not the most, and it's just what I know on the podcast, so forgive me. But you seem passive in the situation where you were upset by it. But your sisters were kind of...
The ones being more aggressive.
Facilitating the, like, I don't care if you know, I'm hiring a PI. Like, I think you're a scumbag, and you were being more passive. Like, how did he lock in on you, and why was his anger put on you?
Well, okay, so I actually had his dog.
Probably because his dog didn't like him.
Well, no, he would leave Vegas and leave the dog at the Vegas house. And then he would come to California and stalk us. So the dog would get out of the yard, and it kept getting out. So the neighbors kept putting the dog back. Mm-hmm. But then one day the dog ended up at animal control. And we gave him a few days to get the dog out of there. But then my mom was like, I'm going to go get the dog. I love this dog. Like, it's our dog now. Like, I gave him a chance to get it. And so my mom works so much, so she gave the dog to me to watch. So that could have had something to do with why he came up after me. But I think it's honestly that he underestimated me.
Yeah.
And he thought that I was my mom's favorite, kind of.
Are you?
Like, sorry, I'm the best.
Oh, I'm the baby. Of the family. Maybe. Yeah, so maybe. And then I'm just a lot more easygoing.
Yeah, you're chill.
You're so
I can
chill.
Tell.
I love it.
I wish I was like you.
Than my sister and stuff. So I think he thought I was an easy target.
Is your sister physically taller than you? Like, did it have anything to do with your size? Because you're so tiny.
Oh, no. My sister's like so much tinier than me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's like 00, like 5'2", just, well, I'm 5'2", too, but she's tiny.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just remember hearing on the podcast, though, you are kind of, when meeting you in person is, I'm just imagining when I first listened to the podcast, you sound whimsical and relaxed and nice, and your sisters are a little bit more like, oh, hell no. Da, 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 da. You know?
So, like, you think that, like, as an aggressive personality from him, he would go after somebody else
passive.
That was... No, I would think... thinking of, like, people that I have known that were psychopaths and how they acted in relationships, they acted more violent and aggressive with somebody that the partner was also a little bit more aggressive. So, it was like...
I think he was trying to hurt the mom.
That, exactly.
It, right. So it was more about like, it was more just like an equation, like who's going to be the easiest and who's going to hurt her the most.
Yeah.
And not put up a thing.
And I'm going to take the baby.
Yeah. And exactly.
So then he started stalking you guys, right?
Yes.
And then how did you find out he was stalking you? Did you actually see him?
Never. But I always had that sense that I was being followed.
Yeah.
And it was really weird because, like, I would walk home from the bars all by myself. Like, that would have been the perfect time to grab me.
Oh, God.
And I would, like, do these, like, 2-mile walks home from the bars just because I like to walk and I didn't want to order an Uber because I was being cheap.
Billy likes to walk, too.
Yeah.
Or he's like, where are you? You're late. He's like, I'm walking.
Billy is like Slenderman walking around. He's going to attack him.
And you have a long gait. It's like 10 feet every time you take this step.
Yeah. Yeah, I can walk a mile in probably about 6 minutes.
Yes.
So you always felt like he was like
lurking.
Like there's something, you just felt it.
Yeah, and then I didn't get confirmation until after my attack, actually.
Okay.
Because he called my work the day before, and he was just using a fake French accent, and he was like, oh, hello, I would like to make an appointment for my two dogs, my Rhodesian Ridgebacks.
And, oh my God.
I met like two Rhodesian Ridgebacks like a couple days prior, but normally when people call to get their dogs groomed, it's usually the wife calling.
Right.
Because the wife is always like, I like them like this, like this way or the highway, and the guy's always like, oh, I need you to call my wife. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, that's kind of fishy because it's a man calling.
And did you recognize his voice at all? Just from,
no.
I can't imagine his accent was good.
No, it wasn't. But like the dogs are barking in the kennel. So it's like, oh, I just need to get this person off the phone.
Right. That's crazy. Who thinks you're calling pretending to be a Frenchman with two Rhodesian like, you're just not looking at that under a microscope because you're like, that's madness.
Yeah. Right.
No one would do that.
Yeah. And those dogs are technically from South America. So,
doesn't make any sense. So he called the day before, said that it was a weird Frenchman,
yes.
And then obviously didn't bring the dogs in.
No, he didn't show at all. He actually called right before my lunch break, and it got disconnected. So I was like, oh, I don't think this guy is going to show. And I just had a feeling that this guy wasn't going to show either. So I literally like left work and I went home for my break because we have like a 2 to 3 hour break, just so the dogs can like rest and we can do like a full 8 hour day, you know? So I went home, started getting ready because I had a country concert that night for Jason Aldean. And
gotta go to Jason Aldean.
Right?
I'm a big country fan
oh,
too,
you
by the
are?
Way.
Yeah. Okay.
I saw you're at Stagecoach.
You were both at Stagecoach at the same time.
Oh, you were?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I go every year.
I'm like surprised I didn't run into you then.
I know. Gotta go next year.
Next year.
Okay, anyway, sorry. So Jason Aldean.
Yeah, so I was planning to go to Jason Aldean's concert. So I went home, started like prepping for that so that when I got off work, I could just be like, oh, I just need to throw on this and get out the door. And so I went home, got ready a little bit, and then I went back to work and I just fed the dogs, took them out a couple times and kind of put them to bed and so that I was able to get off a little bit early. And I left and went home early, and I pull up to where I always park, but the gate was broken, and it's been broken for a few days. So I just like went right in. And as I go past the broken gate, my dog just starts going off on a guy. And I looked over and it was John, but I didn't know it was John.
Yeah.
And he was just fiddling with a tire iron.
That is terrifying.
Right? And he was like backed up into the space. And I just look at him and I'm like, oh, he's homeless. Like, he'll just like figure out his stuff and he needs a place for a minute, you know? And I told my dog to knock it off and he knocked it off. And then I pull into the space. I get out of my seat and then I get my dog out of the back seat. And then I start walking to go down the ramp. And he grabs me right by my license plate and he grabs me by the waist and looks me in the eyes and says, "Do you remember me?" And I just like looked up at him and I was like, oh, I didn't say anything to him, but I was like, oh yeah, I remember you. And
wait, no, who are you?
Right. And I just started trying to flee in that moment because I was just like, I just need to run and get to my house and get ready for this concert.
Did you feel endangered at the moment that you saw him? Like,
oh,
when
yeah.
he grabbed your waist, you were like, oh, shit, he's going to try to do something.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, he's going to try to kill me now. And so that's why I knew I had to flee because I didn't think I would be able to fight this man. And I thought my best case is if I run and get help from someone.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about how I found my absolute dream apartment on the water in Southern California. I'm sitting in my bedroom looking off into the marina and I am so happy. And I found it through one of our sponsors, apartments.com. So I'm so happy that they're a sponsor of the First Degree now. So apartments.com is the number one rental search site with the most listings of apartments, condos, townhomes, and houses. They have it all. And apartments.com has the cutting edge search tools to help you find your perfect place with ease. Apartments.com verifies all of their listings, which means they work to keep all the information and pricing up to date, so you're not wasting your time. If you're like me, I'm sure you've wasted a lot of hours searching on sites that have fake listings or scammy listings that try to make you pay them $500 to come see your house. That almost happened to me. But with Apartments.com, if you're looking for something specific like pet friendly, commute friendly, or just sit on your couch friendly, they have it all. So go to Apartments.com and find your next place to rent, change your apartment, and change your world.
I started trying to flee away from him. I was unable to disconnect from him the whole time.
Where was he holding on to you?
So he grabbed me by the waist, like how you would like just swoop someone, kind of like by the waist, mm-hmm.
right?
And then I like tried to get away, and then I'm like screaming and he's trying to cover my mouth. I bit him as hard as I could when he tried to cover up my mouth because I'm like, he could try to put like chloroform in my mouth, something. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm going to fight as hard as I can, bite as hard as I can, do everything as best as I can in this moment and able to survive. So we ended up like tossing a little bit, and then I fell onto the floor and he's just wailing on me, and he had the knife in a Del Taco bag. So at first I didn't understand I was getting stabbed until I saw the knife. And then
he had his hand inside the Del Taco bag but holding the knife, and then that's what he was.
So he had the Del Taco bag and then he had his hand around like the opening, kind
right.
of, and then
he was stabbing through mm-hmm. the bag.
Yes, he was stabbing through the bag.
Right.
Weird.
Yeah.
Charles.
Yeah, and then I'm on the ground, and I'm pedal kicking him, and I just came from work, so I was wearing rain boots, which had a good significance in this attack and me surviving. And then my dog was also attacking his ankles and biting his ankles while he was on top of me, and I just kept pedal kicking and just trying to block the knife as it came down. And then at one point I was able to kick the knife out of his forearm, and it landed exactly like on my right hand side where I was able to pick up the knife. It was in the ice pick position, so the perfect position to pick up a knife and start just wailing back on him. And I just started wailing back on him. He started to fall on top of me. I like grabbed his head because I watched so much Walking Dead that I'm like, he can't bite me. And so he's like falling on top of me. I have his head. And then I gave two stabs, one to the forehead and then the very last one in the eye. And the one in the eye is which made him brain dead in the kill shot to everyone else. And then he fell like completely on top of me. I pushed him off of me. And then I took the knife, I tossed it as far as I could away so that he wouldn't get up and grab the knife right away. And then I just kind of start screaming for help at that point. And then there was a guy that came and he was like, what can I do? Well, at first there was a girl that came and she just saw my dog running around. And at this point, I realized I had a stab on my forearm. So I just start applying pressure to that so that I don't lose too much blood. And then I just try to evaluate myself and see if I have any other stab wounds. And so she just grabbed my dog because I was like, I have the stab wounds covered and I just need help with my dog. And so she grabbed my dog. And then another guy came up. He was on a bicycle. He gave me his jacket that was red. Thank goodness. And then I just wrapped it around my arm so that I wouldn't see the blood and stuff. And then Skylar came up. And she's like 14 years old. She just came from lifeguard training. So she told me, hi, my name is Skylar. I just came from lifeguard training. I'm trained in this. How can I help you? And so she started wrapping up my wound and applying pressure to that with a clean towel. And then at this time, the police arrive and start questioning me. And then from there, it just is, well, I first called my mom. Sorry, yeah, I get lost in this part.
What was that like?
Oh my gosh.
Oh, what was that call like?
I felt really bad, to be honest, because even though he was a horrible guy and he tried to attack me.
Well, he tried to kill you.
He tried to kill me, but I just felt bad because I knew that she at one point loved this guy. And for anyone to love anyone when they pass, you have to feel something, even if you hate them. You know, it's only human nature to feel sad about someone dying, even if they did attack their daughter, try to kill their daughter, and were purely evil. It's just human nature.
Right.
So I called her and I was like, I'm so sorry. I think I killed your husband. And I told her that I knew this would happen because my sister and I have been telling her from the beginning that this guy was evil, that he was bad, that something was going to come out of it. So I felt the need to tell her that. And then afterwards, I like called my ex-boyfriend and I was like, you need to come here because he's the only one that like met John with me besides like a few of my other friends. And I really needed that support during that time.
What did your mom say?
She was just like, oh, what? What happened? Like, she didn't understand at first.
Couldn't comprehend
it. You know, it was like,
it's so confusing.
Yeah.
The confusion of that. It's like, and the guilt she must have had because of what happened to you.
Yeah. And then she showed up and she wasn't able to get to me because they had like the caution line and tape up. And so she felt guilty that she had to watch me like be interrogated by this just like from afar, you know? So there's a lot of guilt in even that.
And when you were looking at your, when you were evaluating your body and seeing where else you might have been stabbed, did you find any other places that you were stabbed? Or
so at that point I didn't, but later when I was in the hospital, and it wasn't till the end when I was getting released actually, and I was changing into my clothes that my sister brought me, that I had one on my chest.
Oh my gosh. Was it deep?
It was 2 centimeters deep.
Wow.
But with where it was at, I needed to be transferred to a trauma unit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they, like, I think I was in the trauma hospital for maybe 2 days. It was really blurry because I was on a lot of Ativan and Zofran and, like, pain pills and stuff, all the pain medicine they gave me too. So I was really out of it. And I think I was on morphine, and I hate morphine. I just feel really out of it when someone gives me that stuff.
When you were doing the pedal kicks and you were covering your body with your arms, right?
Like covering not your chest with your arms. At this point, when I was on the ground, I probably had my arms, honestly, like I were kickboxing, but I didn't have them up, like protecting my chest. Because when you're on the ground and you're pedal kicking, it's not, oh, I remember now. Sorry, like bits and pieces like come back to me sometimes. I actually had my hands like on the ground a little bit.
Like supporting you.
Yeah. And I'm like, now that I thought it, yeah, my hands were like all scuffed up afterwards.
Mm. And like when this is happening and you're fighting back, my biggest question is, were you just on autopilot, fight or flight? And like, were you not even thinking about what you were doing, or were you being intentional? And that was like what was coming to your brain? Cause like, we've never experienced anything that traumatic, and I don't know how I would react.
Honestly, in this moment, it wasn't like I was thinking. Like, I've seen so many shows and stuff that I probably was, like, subconsciously thinking about it. But in that moment, my body kind of just took over and it did what it needed to do in that moment.
What kind of shows? You had mentioned The Walking Dead for the kill shot, as you called it. But what about the other shows for when you were defending yourself?
Honestly, I watched The Walking Dead, Dexter, CSI Miami, CSI New York, CSI Las Vegas.
CSI Vegas.
Yes. Law and Order. But only, like, the SVU unit.
Obviously. Yeah, Stabler.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then they always used to have, like, such great guests on that show. Yeah. And I just remember listening to a lot of those stories about the survivors, of the people that actually, like, survived. They didn't really survive that because they're on a TV show.
Right.
But all the girls who said that they survived, they said that they fought like hell.
Yeah.
And they didn't give up.
Yeah.
So I knew that I wasn't going to give up, and I really wanted to go see Jason Aldean that night. So
you make it?
I know.
She was in the trauma unit for 2 days.
I know.
No, I'm saying.
Does Jason Aldean know about this? He has to, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I actually met him just for a second at Stagecoach, and that was so nice because I felt kind of a sense of closure.
It's like a full circle moment.
Definitely. Yeah.
And it's like, I was able, like, I've seen him 3 times now, actually. But I was like, in that moment, it was like, this is finally over. I don't have to fight for my life anymore, you know?
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial will last for. But do you know what else that you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. And the amount of time that it takes you to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, make a cup of coffee, or just listen to my voice in this ad, you can get a true cash offer on your car. And best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or your home. You don't even have to leave your couch. So all you do is go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. You answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you bring in your car and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers that you need so there are no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. It's that easy. So when you're ready to experience a better way to trade in or sell your car, check out TrueCar today.
I love that country music was like, you're like, I'm fighting because I want to see Jason Aldean. Yeah. Damn it.
It's country music and dogs. Because like the dogs is a thread throughout this entire story, which is crazy because like you're talking about how your mom she and you mentioned like the kids were gone. She didn't have a dog at the time, and maybe that's why she was willing to let this guy in.
Yeah.
And your dog, you know, you work with the dogs, and then
he
your
called
dog
about the dogs. His dogs.
Yeah. Yes. And then your dog noticed him probably before you even did.
Yeah.
And just started barking, and then your dog, you know, helped save you when he was nipping at his heels, literally.
Yeah. No, Cash had a lot to do with it, and like their instincts are so on point.
Yeah. So I want to know about like the healing process after this. I'm assuming you probably went to a lot of therapy, right?
Oh yeah, so much.
And everyone should. Obviously you probably have crazy PTSD from everything, uh-huh. But like it's pretty crazy how you can talk about this so candidly, and it just seems like it's a normal conversation to you.
Well, there's like, at first, I didn't want to talk about it because it's re-traumatizing going through your trauma each time. And even talking about it now, I'm not going to lie, there's still a time where I'm like, after this podcast, I really like to go home and just hang out with my dogs and like recuperate from it.
Right.
But I've been through so much therapy. I've gone through EMDR. I've even wrote a couple blog posts about my trauma and my therapy and stuff. But I started out doing EMDR therapy.
Can you explain that to, I know what it is, but it's a very interesting, form of therapy.
So what my therapist did is she has these buzzers and these like tapper things that I have to hold in my hand, and I have to have her turn it on really low because when they're on their high, it actually is re-triggering to me. So you kind of have to do EMDR and kind of work your way with what works for you.
What is it supposed to be simulating?
It's just like a sensor, kind of. It's like you go through your attack, and it helps like rewire your brain a little bit with having an extra sense on it.
Interesting.
Yes. And then,
so like you will go through like a play-by-play.
Yes.
And then the sensors will go off at certain times and
They're going off the whole time and buzzing. And so like I would have them in my hands, and then I would actually start with a way less trauma than what I went through, because I've experienced multiple traumas throughout my life, have a lot of people, and you don't realize that it was a trauma when you were younger. So you start out going through those ones, and then you feel like at the end of each time you talk about it, you're like, okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about this?
Yeah.
And then you keep going through it to get it to a lower number.
Got it. Interesting. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's like a lot for PTSD,
yes.
Like getting through like a specific like moment of trauma.
Yes.
So then that's helped you a lot. And then what was I going to say? I was listening to another interview that you did. So like when you do that, you're like put yourself in a happy place, right?
So at the end of it, well, you first like create your happy place, and it's important to have that as a base. And whenever things get to a level where it's too much to handle, you can't really talk about it, or you start to get like a panic attack from it, then you go, your therapist will be like, okay, let's go back to your happy place.
And what is your happy place?
My happy place. So I used to do fly fishing with my dad in Montana. And so it's like at this dude ranch where we used to go fly fishing, and it's like this little pond. And then my dad's not in that, but like I'm at the pond and I have my dog with me, Cash. So it's like I put things that weren't at my happy place before, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So you kind of make your happy place.
Your own.
Yeah, you create your own.
I love that.
That sounds like such a nice happy place.
Emotional about it. No, seriously, what you've been through is so hard.
Well, thank you.
And you take care of yourself. You're going to therapy. You're doing these things, and you are so resilient.
Well, thank you. You just can't let something like this hold you back from other things. You got to go out and live life. And it's like this thing, like it was a horrible event that I went through. But at the end of the day, he's not here. He's not hurting other women. And if I were to survive something, I wouldn't want my attacker there at the end of the day. So
yeah,
I think it's a huge blessing. It just, there was so many things that I had to go through that they are hard, but like, I'm so happy to be here, you know?
Do you think he might have attacked anybody else in the past and got away with it?
So, as I know, he attacked this one girl, I think it was in Laguna Beach, but she fought back. And he ended up suing her because he fell down and, like, broke his teeth. So he sued her, and she had to get him new veneers and stuff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate con man. You try to attack a girl, you fall and hit your teeth, God. And then she has to get you new veneers.
Uh-huh. How has the relationship within your family, the relationships within your family been since? I mean, how's the relationship with your mom, your sister's relationship with your mom?
Yeah, because that's like a complicated thing, especially with your mom.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, I want to just say this. Like, I love my mom to death, but there has been points where it's been hard for me to fully accept her apology.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this situation couldn't have turned out, like, into a better situation. And we did warn her so many times, so there's, like, resentment from us warning her and her not listening to us, and that's hard sometimes, but now I'm in therapy with her.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. I mean, totally.
And it's just, like, teaching each other, like, what makes her happy and how I can communicate with her, and then how she can communicate with me and just do it openly and honestly and not, like, lie about anything. Because when she was with John, she did, like, lie about some stuff about him because she was scared, and so I just have some resentment from that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, having a good relationship with your parents and with your mom is tough enough as it is, mm-hmm. to yeah. have this whole other on thing top on it. Top of it.
Yeah.
Wow. I have one question about, so do you have a boyfriend? Are you dating?
I'm dating, but and my love life's really complicated.
Okay.
Same girl.
Isn't it always? Same. Well, I was going to say, is it having had this experience with him being a psychopath, con artist, tried to kill you, like, has that made your ability to trust men and their intentions harder since then?
I'm a lot more judgy. Like, if a guy does something, then I'm, like, judging him. Like, I actually just ended it with this one guy because he had a lot of, like, narcissistic qualities. And it's really funny because a couple of days ago, this girl contacted me and warned me about him. And I was just like, I already hate him.
Like, we're already done.
Yeah, but let's get together and talk about him.
How'd she find you? Or how'd she know that he dated you?
Because I was at Stagecoach. One of his friends went to the Neon Carnival, and I was there also. And I was trying to avoid him and, like, try to, like, get away from him because I was already over him. But then him and his friend find us, and his friend's, like, a gay man, and my friend was so drunk, and she's like, I've never had a gay best friend before, and so the whole time, she just wants to hang out with him and have a new gay best friend, and I'm just like, I love you, Brooke, but, like, really, like, why does he have to be friends with him? Like, he was amazing. He was so cool. But, like, the guy that I was dating, like,
piece
no.
of shit.
What, yeah. what were some of the narcissistic qualities that he was presenting?
Okay, so this was, like, after a few dates. I went on, like, probably 3 dates with him. But after, like, I think the second date, he came back to my house, and I have a puppy, and the puppy's kind of crazy. She's a little bit wild, but he kept on making comments to me that I was so crazy for adding another animal into my life, and I'm just, like, thinking, Like, I'm not crazy. I love my life. I love my dogs.
Stop judging me, bro.
Yeah.
So and dogs, like, for you, like Billy said, it's like this comfort and this safety. And, like, you could rely on your dog over anything.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I mean, that dog helps when you in your most vulnerable moments of your whole life.
Yes.
You know, more the merrier. Bring right? on the dogs.
Yeah, give me all the dogs. If I didn't have an apartment, I'd probably have like four.
So he was making fun of you for being crazy.
Well, he kept on calling me crazy, and that's a red flag.
Yeah.
When someone uses that word too much and they call other people crazy, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, first
no, you
of all,
make people crazy.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, okay, he's really the crazy one. And then I do this thing with my puppy that's called pressure training. And it's for, like, when the dog bites you and stuff, you, like, apply pressure into their mouth and you either get them to let go or they just, like, yelp one time and it's over. And he made the dog yelp and he didn't let go and the dog continued to cry. And I literally had to tell him, like, okay, you can let go of my dog now. And
oh,
yeah. And ew. For him to do that in that moment, it, like, told me that he didn't have any empathy that he was hurting a dog
or any boundaries yeah. for what he should be doing to somebody as somebody else's chilling. Dog.
Yeah. And did he know your story?
I don't think he knew it fully, but he actually went to the Dirty John premiere.
Oh, okay.
So then he knows.
Yeah.
So to he's an idiot.
Yeah.
On to the next.
I'm sure I don't know. I think my last question is, so obviously the Bravo show came out based on the podcast. Do you think that you were and your story was accurately represented?
So it's so hard to be the person having their story told. So I think that there's always stuff that I would want differently. But it can never be exactly like my life. And, but I really respect how they did it and how they ended it. And I really respect that they met up with me and really got my perspective of the attack. The attack is actually almost exactly how it happened.
Wow.
There was like one thing where she put up her backpack. And I think that I need to clarify when I like, put up my purse to protect my heart. It was like literally just over my heart. I wasn't like defending with the backpack. You know what I mean? So that was different, but everything else was like from my perspective and how it went down.
That's wow. good. So they like did it justice.
What are some of the things that you would have changed?
Well, I just would change like some of the events to make them more so exactly how they went down.
Mm-hmm.
But with it being like Bravo and TV, it's like they can't do our exact story. There has to be some stuff that is different. And then if someone's like names in there, like my ex-boyfriend, that story's changed
right.
also.
Right, if he's not like signing off for it.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for you?
What next? So far, I'm just working on my blog, and I'm really trying to get more into talking about PTSD and the trauma and therapy. So I'm trying to do more blog posts like that, but I'm also traveling a lot, and then we have Crime Con coming up.
Sure do.
We have so much fun.
Sure do. Yeah, are you trying to get into the talking to other survivors or anything about the self-defense or any into that world at all?
Well, I would really like to do more speaking engagements, going around talking to girls about surviving my attack, what they should do in an attack like that, and then also about the aftermath, about the PTSD and what it's like to go through a trauma, because I don't think a lot of people realize that they may have gone through a trauma in their life and that they may have some issues from it. Like if you were abused as a child, that's a trauma. If you were in a car accident, that's a trauma. And so it's really important to realize that this trauma has affected you and to get help for that.
I love that. Do we have any other questions?
My last one, and I want this to come out correctly, would be just, this is awful, but are there any silver linings for you in that, did anything good happen as a result of this awful thing?
I feel like that 100%, that there was so much good that came out of this. Like, he's dead. He's not here tormenting anyone else. This show came out, and a positive thing about that is that it's created awareness for so many women with that are going through a John scenario. And it doesn't even have to be as extreme as John, just to realize that there's people like that out there. And then I feel like I have a life purpose now, and I finally feel that in my life, where when I was working with dogs and stuff, I loved it and I loved them so much, but now I feel like I actually have a purpose.
Well, it's personal. I mean, this, it was a life and death situation, and it put you on a new trajectory. It's deeply personal, and like, few people get those moments to be like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's so powerful.
Well, and few people, I'm not gonna say few people, but it takes a lot to be as resilient as you are, to be so open to talk about it and to use such a, you know, tragic thing that happened to you as a platform to help other girls. So have other girls come up to you and been like, I've dumped this dude because I see all these qualities that were in John?
Yeah, so many actually. And it's made me so happy, because there's points where I get like, trolls, and
obviously. We all do.
Yeah, and then you're just like, do I really want to do this?
You're pretty on top of everything else, so I'm sure that doesn't help.
Well, someone told me the other day that I needed to buy myself a butt, and I was like, oh, thank you, I'm so skinny now.
Always twist it into a compliment.
I can't, people are trolling you. Like, I understand why people would troll me, but like, I don't know, like, all you did is try to defend yourself. Like, what the
Well, you know what? People that are unhappy in their own lives, they could choose anything to critique. They could be like, I don't like her voice, which is what most people say.
People make fun of my voice, too.
Okay, cool.
And my breathing.
You're breathing.
She's a heavy breather.
Did you heavy breathe in this episode over anxiety?
Probably, Jeff.
That's a yes. But yeah, I guess you're right. Like, people will pick, like, they'll talk shit on Mother Teresa if they can.
Yeah.
But, like, people are such dicks.
No, makes fun of Billy. He's the only exception.
Oh, people make fun of me. Don't worry.
Yeah, we make fun of you enough.
Yeah, and you guys make fun of me enough. Exactly. So, but I think what I always say about true crime, and people always ask me, like, why is true crime so popular and this and that? And I say, well, the thing that always bothers me about true crime is that you have 1,000 supervillains and so few superheroes. You've got Bundy and Gacy and Jack the Ripper and Son of Sam and all of this on one side. And then when you think about the heroes, they're often, you know, nameless and faceless, because they're doing the work, behind the scenes or whatever. You can mention John Walsh or somebody like that. But, you know, the more that we can show survivors and somebody that is now thriving, I think is viewed. So it's my way of saying that you're a superhero.
Oh, thank you.
That was poetic.
That was really poetic.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. Like, this was so cool for us to actually like get to talk to you face to face. And
thank you.
You're so wonderful. And yeah.
No, we're so excited.
Oh, thank
you. I'm excited. You have big things on the horizon. Yeah. I know it.
Yes. And we'll see you at CrimeCon.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody come to CrimeCon.
No, seriously, this is going to be the best, like, posse, drink-getting posse situation.
You know we're
going
to force you to be our friend at CrimeCon.
Oh, I will be your friend at CrimeCon.
Yes.
But CrimeCon only.
And in real life.
Like, and then we're not friends. I'm going to be, like, coming down to Long Beach and I'm like, Tara. I'm, like, walking around trying to find you. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. Your Instagram's just Tara Newell, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Follow Tara on Instagram. We'll be posting from CrimeCon. And if you guys have a story, we would love to share it. So DM us on Instagram at The First Degree, at Alexis Linkletter, at Jack Vanek, at Billy Jensen. And happy.
What day is it?
Happy.
Bitch day.
Attitude day.
Happy attitude day.
See you at
CrimeCon. Over and out.
This episode quotes directly from the Los Angeles Times series Dirty John by Christopher Gofford.